You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Pepsi's the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. So go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back here, Kevin Ostreicher here with you. And we are back. It is a midweek edition of Locked On Ravens, and that means it is mailbag time. And that also means Cole Jackson of Russell Street Report returns to the show to help answer your questions. Cole, it's been a rough few days for Baltimore. How you doing?
I gotta say, I'm like the meme of the dog sitting in the room on fire saying, this is fine. It's fine. You nailed it. It's been a really rough 48 hours. Tough loss. The news of COVID was bad. I think we're all a little disappointed we didn't get a little action done at the deadline. But, I mean, hey, healthy and moving forward. So I'm just ready to get back to game prep and get ready for the Colts on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot to talk about with anything from Ronnie Stanley's injury, the Ravens lost to Pittsburgh. You have Marlon Humphrey and his positive COVID diagnosis and how that affects the team. Cole, we have it all today. And so we have three full segments of questions. There are a lot of questions. So if we don't get to yours here today, I will be answering them tomorrow and on Friday. So do not fret. Your question will be answered on this show. But Cole, let's start out our segments here, and let's start out with a question from Calvin. And he says, I don't know if it's just me, but are Ravens fans becoming more overreactive than in the past? I've seen a lot of takes from the community wanting to give up on Lamar, or just overall overreacting when it comes to the week after a loss. Or do you think major concern is warranted? Cole, what are your thoughts on that one?
So short answer, yes, but I know you come here for the long answer. So I think the success that the team had last year in the regular season, and not just getting the wins that we got, but how we got the wins. We were steamrolling teams and flying high, and I think it just, anytime it sets the expectations high. We also had a record-setting rushing offense, and our quarterback still managed to lead the league in touchdowns. So I mean, it's hard to not expect regression. But now that we're kind of seeing it play out, I think people are going into that major concern area. So am I concerned? I mean, I have concerns about certain areas of the team, but I just think it's still too early to kind of go into that mass panic. So, when I'm talking about what happened last year, I think a lot of people forget that, Lamar Jackson struggled early in the season last year, and he struggled against the Steelers. And so, kind of the theme has been his struggles against the Steelers, the Chiefs, and of course in the playoff game against the Titans and the previous game against the Chargers. But he's a young quarterback, and I will keep saying that because it is relevant. And we'll see guys go up and down early in their career, and it's really about how he adjusts moving forward. So this is really where you have to start to expect Lamar Jackson to take off. It's these next couple of weeks where if he doesn't bounce back, then you kind of get into concern territory, because he showed us last year that he can bounce back from an early struggle with his passing. We know what he can do with his legs, and he showed it on Sunday and how they can be a weapon. So I think it's too early to be panicking. I know a lot of people are. Everyone's entitled to their own reaction and how they want to do it, but it's too early for me. And it's really these next, I'm going to say two games, these next two games are where Lamar specifically needs to get going, but then more broadly, just the team as a whole.
Right. And I think the main takeaway, Cole, and you mentioned it, is the Ravens aren't going to blow out teams by 35 points every game. The Ravens aren't going to win every game. I mean, this is a league in the NFL where even teams like the Jets, who are 0-8 right now, They have talented players on their roster. This is an any given week league. In Baltimore, they had a historic 2019. You know, there are no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But when you look at this team from a 2020 perspective, again, no preseason, shortened offseason. You even look at Lamar Jackson's stats from 2019. At this point, last year, he didn't really get it going until the second half of the season. This whole offense didn't really get clicking until the second half of the season. So against Pittsburgh, yes, Lamar Jackson, you can blame a lot of the loss on him and the really bad turnovers, penalties, this and that and the other. But I think the Ravens are going to be just fine. This is a playoff team. You know, it's interesting because the AFC North is so competitive this year that we might see Baltimore be a 12-4 wild card team, which is a really good record if you're talking about winning a division. But with Pittsburgh at 7-0, it might be a little bit difficult to, you know, make up a stretch run, especially if Baltimore loses to Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving, which, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think will happen. But our next question comes from K-Mo, and they ask, what are your thoughts on no trades at the trade deadline? So, Cole, let's start with you here.
Well, so, I mean, we did make a trade, right? Like, we brought in Yannick Ngakoue. It wasn't today, but it was still a trade deadline trade. So that was pretty significant. And you and I talked about it a bit before the show. The Ravens love draft picks. That's not new. We know they like to stock them. Personally, would I have made a move today? Would I have moved to six like the Titans did for Desmond King? Yes, I would have. Am I disappointed the Ravens didn't? A little bit, but I understand it. And I know they like to keep their picks. You can argue that Desmond King is a little bit more of a proven commodity and might live up to more than a six-round pick ever would, even if Desmond King doesn't return next year. So I get the frustration, but you know, you got to remember they did bring in Ngakoue. That's a pretty significant move. He didn't have the greatest debut in the world, but you know, I guess it was hard to expect much after they made a significant trade already.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Yes, I probably would have made a move. Desmond King would have been nice for the draft compensation he was given up for. Even guys like Brian Poole, potentially. We saw, you know, other guys on the lower end of the spectrum, like a Dante Pettis, get cut by San Francisco yesterday. So maybe he will come to Baltimore by way of free agency. But Baltimore likes consistency on their roster. It was honestly a pretty big deal that Baltimore went out and acquired Marcus Peters last year, that they went out and acquired Calais Campbell. They go and trade for Yannick Ngakoue. They signed Dez Bryant on the same day. That's pretty big news because Baltimore loves consistency, especially in the pandemic world we're living in right now. So, you know, it is a little disappointing, but at the same time, Baltimore's roster is still really good. Obviously, the whole coronavirus situation with Marlon Humphrey and the close contacts kind of depletes that until Sunday, where hopefully those guys come back. But at the end of the day, the Ravens did not make a trade, and honestly, that's okay. But our next question here, Cole, comes from Nate Eicholtz, and Nate asks, can our defense go on no practice or are we screwed? So the Ravens defense is in a bit of a predicament right now with the whole Marlon Humphrey coronavirus diagnosis. There were 7 close contacts placed on the reserve COVID list. It includes Patrick Queen, Matthew Judon, Malik Harrison, LJ Fort, Deshaun Elliott, Terrell Bonds, and Tyus Bowser. There are no practice. No practice for those guys all week. If they test negative throughout the next 5 days, they will be able to return to the football field and play in the game against Indianapolis on Sunday. But as we saw with Lamar Jackson a few weeks ago, having missed a few practices, that's tough for players, especially with all the reps and the learning that goes on there. So, Cole, what are your thoughts on this defense if there's no practice for those guys?
Yeah, and I think the thing you have to remember is during the bye week, they're still in the facility, but it's not like a normal week. So, you know, they just had the bye week and then they had a game week. And then it's kind of like for these defensive players that aren't allowed in the facility, it's almost like another bye week where they're doing like, you know, virtual stuff. They're obviously doing all their film stuff virtually now. That stuff's all important, but you're right. There's no replacement for that kind of being on the field, and it's just getting into a rhythm, right? It's like any routine in any career. You know, when you start to mix it up, it's just tough to adjust. So we're gonna see some sloppiness, I think. We talked about it a bit before the show. I'm not very, I hate to say I'm cocky, but I just don't really fear the Colts that bad, especially their offense. I don't think Phillip Rivers has much left in the tank. I think we match up really well with them, our defense with their offense. So this just really throws a wrench in it, right? Like it's going to be tough. They're going to have to get into a rhythm early. You know, it may be one of those, I guess a good question to look at it is, you know, how could Wink adjust? I think I'd actually go conservative at the gate, let guys get kind of settled in the first quarter, get their legs under them. And then he can kind of, you know, go back to his normal scheme. That's just a tactic that, you know, kind of helps guys settle in, without having to worry about giving up big plays and that sort of, aspect. But it, there's no denying it. It's going to hurt them this week to just not be on the field.
Yeah, right now Chris Board is the only quote-unquote healthy active linebacker right now. You know, you have Kristen Welch, who has played some snaps after being called up from the practice squad on special teams, but not necessarily as an inside linebacker on defense. So it'll be tough, but again, Baltimore's defense, they have depth, and while, you know, putting seven players plus Marlon Humphrey on the COVID list really eats into that, especially after, you know, losing Tavon Young, losing Imam Marshall, Anthony Averett, it's rough, but Baltimore's defense, I think, is equipped for this. Most likely, they'll have these guys back, the guys who were placed on the COVID list as close contacts, back for this game against Indianapolis. And as long as they're on the football field, the defense, you know, they'll get a boost regardless of how often they practice. But I do expect some sloppiness, kind of, as you said, right there, Cole. Our last question before the break comes from Warren Copeland, and we are a non-profanity show here on Locked On Ravens, so it's a family-friendly show, so we'll cut that profanity out. How down bad are the Ravens right now, Cole, and why is that answer yes?
Yeah, I mean, things are rough right now, but this is exactly when I expect a team like the Ravens to switch gears. So, no, I do not think that we are quote-unquote effed. I think they're going to get things going here. And, you know, think about the Ravens' history. Right when they started to become the underdogs, that's when things kick into gear. You know, go no further than the 2012 Super Bowl. Going down the stretch, they didn't even look like a playoff team. And they snuck in. Well, they didn't sneak in. They won the division and had that home playoff game against Indy. But, you know, they got in, and then that's all that matters. So it's really about when that flip can switch. So I think we're going to see it soon. You know, I think people are so down on the team. The criticism is so high, just like it was kind of early last year after Lamar started to struggle against Cleveland and Pittsburgh in weeks 3-4. There was also, you know, a cut, like he didn't play overly well in the Arizona game. And then, you know, things clicked and things started rolling. So that's what I'm expecting. So I'm not ready to give up on them yet. That's for sure.
No, this roster is far too talented. You know, the offensive personnel, defensive personnel, even the coaches, and we'll get into some, you know, coaching analysis in the second segment, but this is a talented group from top to bottom. The schedule is obviously, it's easy down the stretch. If Baltimore can go 3-1 in the next four games, kind of, you know, that stretch of games, ending a tough stretch. You know, you have Indianapolis this week, New England next week, you have the Titans, and then Pittsburgh. If you can go 3-1 in those games, I think Baltimore wins every game on the rest of their schedule except for maybe Cleveland in prime time. So that's 12-4 at the very worst. I am still confident in this Baltimore team. They are still learning, much like the rest of the NFL. And I think as the season goes on, they will become better and better. But we're going to head into our first break now, and when we return, we'll be getting into more of your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. So go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. We are back with our second segment of this Wednesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still talking with Cole Jackson and diving back into our mailbag. Cole, I want to talk to you about a question from Marty Kelly, and he asks, what is the scenario where Matthew Judon returns to the team after the season, or is there even one?
No, it's a good question. I was in the camp that I didn't think Judon was going to be back next year, and this was before we traded for Yannick Ngakoue. Nothing against Judon. I just think he's going to ask for more than they can pay with, I mean, I guess it's not past tense anymore with the guys that they've paid so far. You know, we just inked Stanley to a big deal. We've already inked Humphrey, and it's just money's getting short, and you kind of have to take guys off there. And then they traded for Yannick, and now things are even more kind of up in the air. It looks like Yannick's going to have a more favorable franchise tag number if he is willing to play under it in next year. I think Judon's will be as high as like 20 million based on projections, which I just, that's too much. So I think it sucks. I don't really want to see him go, but I don't see a scenario. It would have to be that they're willing to sacrifice a future signing like an Andrews, like an Orlando Brown, and go with Judon instead. And I just can't see them doing that. And I seriously think there's a good chance they keep Yannick around because, you know, he fits what they do. They just traded not high compensation for him. You know, it's not like they gave a first or a second round pick, but, you know, a third for the Ravens is quite a bit. So, and we know that he's high on being in Baltimore. I think he wants to stay. He's got the ties here with, you know, being a former Terp and also his family being here. So I think that's just kind of a match made in heaven. And I don't want to just say Judon wants the money. I mean, who doesn't want the money? But, you know, maybe Yannick will take a little bit of a haircut to have some of those personal needs met with being in Baltimore. That's pure speculation. I haven't heard that or anything, but, you know, I think there's more logic there. So, and I think Judon's going to be looking for his payday. So it's unfortunate, but I just don't see a scenario where Judon is a Baltimore Raven next year.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Cole. Even before the Ngakoue trade, I was kind of thinking of it as, well, out of all the players Baltimore has to re-sign, they probably can't re-sign all of them. There are going to have to be some cuts somewhere, some guys who are going to be lost, you know, either because they get offered more money somewhere else, the money just doesn't work out. And in my mind, that guy, even before Ngakoue, was Judon. Now, with Ngakoue in the fold, you know, I just think that this is, people are paying for sacks. People pay for sacks. It's not like Matthew Judon is a sack-only guy where, oh, he only has two sacks this year, he's a horrible player. He does a lot for Baltimore in multiple different aspects of the game of football. But at the end of the day, I think what Judon is going to ask for is not where the Ravens are going to want to come in money-wise, and that's going to be the demise of the talks for them. And he'll ultimately go somewhere, maybe on a Za'Darius Smith-type deal, to a different team. But Cole, our next question comes from Alex Lawson, and Alex asks, do you think that there will be an offensive scheme change or an adjustment anytime soon, like a Cam Cameron type thing, or is it just business as usual?
This has been a big discussion over the last couple of weeks around Greg Roman. I mean, we have to keep in mind, players have to go out and execute, right? And Greg Roman finally got the run game going. We absolutely slashed Pittsburgh on the ground. And, you know, we can criticize play calls on, like, we can look at one play call and say it's the wrong call. I get it, but when you look at the interception to open the second half, I mean, it's a tendency breaker. And Kevin, you and I talked about it when they came out against Philly and were running on first down until they had that 30-yard completion to Snead on first down when they went to play action. And I think that's where the play call comes from. You know, you're gashing them on the ground, you're coming out of the half, you're probably expecting them to stack the box, so you call a quick out. And Alex Highsmith talked about it after the game. They had seen that that Andrews out route, and Highsmith was on Ricard in the flat, and he just read it, and the ball was placed poorly. That was a terrible throw by Lamar Jackson. So, I mean, it's easy to be like, the play calling's terrible, why are we calling passes? But, I mean, if the pass play is called, the players have to execute it. And I still think the number one reason that this team has been struggling is their execution. It hasn't been the play calling. Even if you go look at something like, there was the fourth down play, not the one that Lamar fumbled on at the end there before they got the ball back for the last drive, but there was a fourth down and they called a counter bash. It was like fourth and six, or maybe it was third and six, and everyone started freaking out about Greg Roman calling a run on third and, you know, mid, but it was a tendency breaker and he went to the counter bash, which we have ripped off some of our longest runs of the year with that concept where Lamar fakes it and the backside tackle and guard pull, and, you know, our Orlando Brown absolutely smashed Terrell Edmonds on that play. But, you know, Skur got beat. So it's one of those things. Skur makes that block, he converts. You know, it's frustrating because you know, I think we go to blame the coaching a little bit too much, and we need to kind of look at the players executing their assignments in front of them, and there just hasn't been enough of that. And that's been the biggest difference between 2019 and 2020. So do I see a change coming a la Cam Cameron? I personally don't think it's that bad. You know, maybe not statistically, but on the impact he made on the game, he was Flacco's go-to. So, you know, I don't see that type of stubbornness from Roman. You know, you could say early in the year his stubbornness to go away from the run was there, but again, they were not effective on the ground. And yesterday, they kept running the ball. And even on at the end of the game in the fourth quarter when they were down, they ran almost every single play. So he was willing to pound the rock even in a fourth quarter come from behind scenario. So I think he's going to get back into his groove, but the players have to go out and execute. That's first and foremost for me. That's been the biggest issue.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And there are some play calls still that I don't agree with, but I think on Sunday against Pittsburgh, that was Greg Roman's best game that he called.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Again, they're still figuring it out. Yeah, they're still figuring it out. The offense, the personnel, everybody involved, it comes down to a combination of both play calling and execution. It's not one. It's not, you know, one or the other. They both have to go hand in hand with each other. So once Greg Roman, you know, starts to, you know, it not even starts, once Greg Roman continues to grow and evolve and learn, because these coaches, no matter, you know, how many years they've been in the league, they are still learning every single day. So once they continue to learn and analyze, study opponents, once the offensive personnel begins to execute more, this offense, seriously, it could become truly unstoppable. But another question here from Lockdown Lou, and he says that his concern is with Roman. He's not confident that he can make the necessary adjustments to take this offense to the next level. Good teams are using defensive schemes from last year to stop us. Hollywood and Duvernay should get more touches. Do you think Roman is the guy?
It's a good question. Roman was certainly the guy for Lamar early in his career, as in, I guess, last year. You know, he brought in a scheme that fit Lamar so well. You know, and as Lamar develops, you kind of have to expect Greg Roman to develop as well. And, you know, there are some things that I think he could do better. You know, he could do a little bit more creative things in terms of the play calling for, you know, if Lamar's struggling, like, why not try and get a rub route or a pick route going to get him an easy completion? I think that's been one of the things that we're not seeing is kind of just those easy pitch and catches on early in the game, like in the first quarter, like just get, you know, a couple quick slants going. Or and don't get me wrong, like we run a ton of slants. There's, you know, short concepts on just about every play, but it's kind of where the design is, where's his first read. You know, we've been going to those spot routes, which I have a big problem with them because we're seeing a lot of two or three linebackers as well as a safety up in the box. So, you know, that plays to right, the spot route is coming in right where those guys are. And that seems to be his go-to short concept, whereas a slant, if you keep it going, you can get it over those guys' heads. But, you know, I think if we can get this run game going and Lamar elevates his play to what we can expect in terms of him throwing the football, you know, I think we're going to start to see this offense roll again. And then it'll kind of be like, oh, look how great Roman is. And then, you know, it's like last year, we're worried about him getting a head coaching job. So I think Roman can get there. I think he's a good offensive coordinator. And the thing with the receivers, and, you know, there was always all that talk about receivers wouldn't want to play under Greg Roman. If you go back and look at those San Francisco teams where they had Crabtree and Bolden had two back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons under Greg Roman. He can get the ball moving in the air, and he did it with Colin Kaepernick, and I think Lamar Jackson is a far better quarterback than Colin Kaepernick was. So I think he can get there. I think it's just we're really underestimating how poorly this team is executing the plays in front of them, and it was in display in the second half against the Steelers. So, you know, I want to give him a little bit more of a look before I say that he can't do it. There's things that I disagree with that he does, absolutely, but I still think there's a lot that he does well. This was by far his best game this year in terms of play calling and play design. And I think people really don't understand that putting almost 500 yards up on the Steelers defense is extremely impressive. And Roman deserves a ton of credit for that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, I think, again, as I kind of said during my answer to the last question, I think that Roman, he's growing. He's still growing, still learning. And this is an offense where early in the season, you know, you're right, Cole. I think Roman and even Lamar Jackson were trying to force the narrative that this is a throwing football team. They can throw the football and they can win games throwing the football. But in reality, this is a running football team. They win football games by running the football. And that's not a bad thing. It's not like running the football saying, well, we can't throw the ball, because the run game goes hand in hand with the pass game, and the pass game goes hand in hand with the run game. So if you're a run-first football team, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden your quarterback isn't a quarterback or that he can't throw. All the narratives that we've heard about Lamar Jackson before. Lamar Jackson is a perfectly competent NFL quarterback, but to win these games, what the Ravens have to do is run the football effectively. And our next question, kind of a duo question, but with two people, two minds thinking alike, Brendan Ward and Dominic Henson, and they ask, with the injury to Stanley in the offensive line's inability to pass block or make key blocks in critical moments, do you think the coaching staff will finally reshuffle the offensive line? Same thing with Dominic here. Does the offensive line finally shuffle? And Dominic also asks, is Dez called up to the active roster this week?
So I'll start with the O-line. You know, I think it's funny how we react game by game. The issue the last two games before the bye week was that we were pass blocking pretty well, but we couldn't run block. And then we come against the Steelers and, you know, somehow we're able to blow guys like Cam Hayward and Tua off the line, but then we can't pass block. So it always kills me because it's like, you know, we've played a lot of good defensive lines and the pass pro and run blocking have just been so bipolar in terms of how they've performed. So, you know, what does a shuffle look like? First of all, I think Fluker has done really well at right tackle. He's going to struggle with speed rushers. We know that. It's actually going to work, I think, in our favor for what we want to see out of the passing scheme, because I think they're going to have to go to a lot of quick hitters to get the ball out. Even Orlando Brown being at left tackle, he's just not Ronnie Stanley in pass pro, and nor is he expected to be. I mean, Ronnie Stanley's a top three left tackle in the whole league, and Orlando Brown's a top five right tackle, but it's just a very different dynamic on the right. He doesn't have he has the benefit of having Lamar able to see because he's not on the blind side. So it's going to be a bit of a struggle. So, you know, I do think they maintain that kind of left tackle, right tackle setup. I don't see them bringing in anyone. You know, there is a guy like Cordy Glenn out there that they could bring in off the streets for depth, but he hasn't played all year. Some of the reasoning for why he's not on a team is many people just thought he was kind of done. He wasn't interested in playing anymore. But on the flip side, it kind of reminds me of a Bryant McKinney situation. Apparently the theme tonight is for me to refer back to the 2012 Super Bowl team, but I'm going to keep rolling. Bryant McKinney kind of had those motivational issues, but then when he got in, he was lights out. So, I mean, maybe they look at a guy like Cordy Glenn to bring him in and see what he's got. They have ample roster spots available with Stanley and Phillips going to IR. So that's something that I'd be interested in seeing, and maybe, you know, Glenn gets out there, he gets in shape in the next couple of weeks, and they're able to insert him either at left or right tackle. But to the interior offensive line, and we talked about this a ton before the season started in our first couple of episodes, and you know, I think Bradley Bozeman has really shut my mouth in terms of what I thought he could do at left guard. He's played very well. He's exceeded any expectations I had. In fact, I had to eat my words on Bozeman. I still, however, maintain that I think his highest ceiling as a player is at center. I think, you know, he can be a good left guard. I think he can be a great center. And if I'm looking at shuffling, it's really that center position where I start. And I think, you know, you could see a line where you have Makari, Bozeman at center, and then you're inserting Ben Powers, and that's the shuffle that I want to see. I'm not sure they're going to do it. I think they would have made that change at during the bye week, and the fact that they came out with Phillips starting told me that they're going to kind of keep it status quo. So I'm not expecting a shuffle. I personally would recommend a shuffle because I just think Skur is not there athletically, and it's going to be hard for him to get on track because, you know, it's just, I know he said he's 100%. There's no way that he's 100%. I mean, you can see it in his mobility. That said, I was really impressed with Patrick McCurry coming in at right guard. He struggled in pass pro, and I think that a lot of the pressure kind of came from that right side A and B gap on the interior, which, I mean, he saw a healthy dose of Cameron Hayward. So, I mean, that's a tough matchup. He's one of the best interior defensive linemen in the league. So that's just tough to begin with. But, and that's why I like Powers. Powers has a stout anchor. So, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot of him getting into level two and making those blocks, but he's going to take care of business at the point of attack. And I also think Roman helped them out a little bit. We saw a little bit more inside zone and zone read. where you could kind of double those guys at the point of attack. And that was where Mekari thrived. If you go watch him, he's making blocks in level two way better than Phillips was able to. And that's the key difference between the 2019 and 2020 rushing game. And I think that's why we had so much more success. We were able to get guys doubled at the point of attack and then get those guys peeling off into level two, blocking those linebackers and opening those rushing lanes. So, you know, I hope that they make a shift. I don't think they will, because I don't know why they wouldn't have done it at the bye week, especially pertaining to Matt Skura. And as for the second part of the question about Dez Bryant, I don't think he's going to be active this week, but I could see it coming. I think Miles Boykin catching that touchdown is going to hurt Dez a little bit. You know, those are the plays that Boykin needs to make to kind of keep getting snaps. So, and I mean, we saw a big play from Duvernay too. So it's going to be tough for Dez to get active.
Yeah, I agree with all that, Cole. In terms of Dez, I think next week is his week. I said that coming out when Baltimore signed him, and I'm going to stick with that here. But in terms of the offensive line, yeah, I mean, if I were to make a change anywhere, it probably would be with Matt Skura. But at this point, with Tyree Phillips going on IR, Mekari's going to be the guy at right guard. Maybe you see a rotation again with Mekari and Powers. But I think, yes, I would probably prefer to see a change at center. But at the end of the day, I think Baltimore's going to go out and start Orlando Brown on the left side, Bozeman at left guard, Skura at center, Mekari at right guard, and then finally Fluker at right tackle. But we're going to head into our final break here. And when we get back, it's more mailbag questions for us. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious with 6 new flavors, including caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They're healthy, they're great for the health conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. So go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. We are back, our final segment here of Locked On Ravens on Wednesday. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with Cole Jackson, answering your mailbag questions. And Cole, just jumping right back in, our first question comes from Roberts B. And he asks, do you think this team can overcome enough adversity to make it to the Super Bowl? Or as fans, do we just hope for one playoff win?
It's a good question, and it's funny because we all wanted the adversity, right? We wanted to see them have to overcome it, and now we're seeing it, whether it be you know, early struggles after such a prolific 2019 season for the offense, whether it be, you know, the COVID stuff, whether it be a little bit of drama from Hollywood Brown, like this team is going through adversity. So I think it's good. I think it's good to go through this now rather than going through it as in, say, I don't know, a playoff game against the Titans. So, you know, I am pleased to see that. I think this only makes teams stronger. It brings guys together. Now, what are the expectations or how does it impact what I expect? I still think they're a Super Bowl contender. I still think they're, you know, they might not win the division, and just based on the Steelers having, you know, the easiest schedule and, you know, at worst splitting with the Ravens, that's just going to be a tough one to swallow. They don't have to play like a team like Kansas City, so their schedule is a little bit easier. I think it was ranked 30th based on teamrankings.com. So, I mean, that just is what it is. So, you know, we may be looking at that kind of top wild card spot, being on the road in the playoffs, but, you know, maybe that works in our favor. Maybe we are going to thrive as an underdog the way previous Ravens teams has. You know, I'm glad we're going through adversity now. I think fans asked for it, and now they're seeing it, and they just have to accept that we're going to have to go through some struggles to overcome this adversity. But they're still Super Bowl contenders. Obviously, step one is always winning that first playoff game, and that's any season, not just with a team that struggled 2 years in a row in the playoffs. I think it's just, you know, that's the first expectation. I absolutely expect them to win a playoff game this year. I'm not going to say I expect them to win the Super Bowl, because that's hard to say, but I do still think they're contenders.
Yeah, I do too. And again, if the Ravens are the 5 seed, if Baltimore ends up not winning the division, it's not like they're a worse team. You know, they're still the team that they would have been if they would have won the AFC North. And again, I'm not saying they're not going to, but there is a real possibility with Pittsburgh being 7-0 here that the Ravens could be, you know, a really good team that's a 5 seed in the playoffs. And that means going up against maybe the Buffalo Bills or Tennessee Titans away in the first round. So if that's the case, you know, Baltimore just has to go out there and play their game. It's not like they're an any worse team, if whether they're an AFC North champion or a wild card team. But our next question comes from Garnet West, and he asks, Will we see more pistol sets in a different progression read from the passing game? From watching the All-22, everything has been inside, and if nothing's available, then he checks it down. Will we see him work from the outside to inside to free up the middle of the field against cover two heavy looks?
It's a good question. Definitely want to look at that in cover two. One thing that I think this team has been missing, and Spencer Schultz mentions this quite frequently, so credit to him, because I don't want to, you know, make it sound like I'm stealing his idea, but you know, not having checkdowns has been an issue with Greg Roman's scheme, in my opinion. They're just not always there, and I think that kind of hurts Lamar. But when they are there, one of my biggest criticisms of Lamar is he doesn't always take the easy throw. You know, if he has a guy open on a shorter crossing route versus a guy open on a deeper crossing route, we saw this earlier in the year, he always goes for the deeper guy, and it's just, you know, I get it, he wants to make the bigger play, but sometimes there's just as much value in, you know, an 8-yard first down versus a 16-yard first down, you know, as a hypothetical, if you know, say it's 3rd and 5. So, you know, I think that's something that needs to develop out of this. Now, as for the progressions, I think, you know, we are getting caught going inside outside, and I think teams are just queuing on it. Like, if you go back and look at the Steelers on that last play, they just clogged the middle of the field, and Lamar ended up going to Snead in the seam. And to be fair, that throw was pretty much perfect. It's just, that's a tough catch against while taking contact. Like, you know, it wasn't a drop because he was hit and it was well defended, but you know, the ball was delivered there. But if you go back and look, and actually it was Garnet West that posted it, at Garnet478 on Twitter, if you want to go check it out, there is a look to Boykin outside on the left side of the field. Now, it is going to be where he just is chucking it up and Boykin's got to go out and get it. But I think this is what Garnett's getting at. Teams are going to stack the middle of the field, and it's going to give you more one-on-one looks on the outsides. And I think that was an example of where it was. So it's either, you know, fitting that ball in a tight seam to Willie Snead in, you know, the middle of the field, or do you go out and you put up a jump ball for a guy like Miles Boykin or a Dez Bryant if he ends up active? So I would like to see them start looking a bit more outside, because I think that play is kind of a nice microcosm of that phenomenon where, you know, you'll see guys one-on-one outside, and, you know, let's start trying to get our guys to go up and make a play on the ball. So, you know, good point, Garnett, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with this, you know, 100%. And you look at what Lamar Jackson, you know, the personnel that he's out there with, it fits him. It fits what his game is. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, that's a system quarterback and this and that. You're supposed to put a system around your quarterback that works. And I think checkdowns, as Spencer's alluded to, and everybody's, you know, kind of been saying it. But, yeah, I mean, the checkdowns, they're a big, big part of, I think, what makes a successful pass offense. Because sometimes when you go up against elite pass defenses, things are just going to be covered. You know, front, back, and center, there will be no one open. And if you can have a checkdown there to get even 2, 3, 4 yards, that's better than a sack. That's better than a turnover. Better than, you know, no yards. I think that's a really good point. Our next question comes from Nova, and they ask, offensive line consistency leaves Lamar under duress. Lamar holding the ball too long, but it also can be attributed to the wide receivers not getting open. Duvernay needs more touches. Lamar has to get his accuracy and strikes to Hollywood consistently. What is the overall answer on offense to get rolling?
Well, I think we saw it. I mean, if Lamar plays even remotely up to what we know he can do as a passer, you know, we win that game. It was in our hands. I really think it's underrated, not underrated. I think a lot of people know that touchdown or that interception, sorry, to start the second half killed us. That's like the one thing that we couldn't do on that drive, and we gave them a short field up 10. But I think, you know, how do we get the offense going? We run the rock, and we just did it against one of the best defenses in the league. So the Colts are a great defense. They're good against the run. They just got Darius Leonard back, so it's another big test. I don't think their defensive line is as good as the Steelers, but it's still a good D-line. They have a guy like DeForest Buckner. They have Leonard, like I mentioned, who's one of the best middle linebackers in the game right now. But if they want to get things going, if they want to start doing to inside linebackers what Lamar did last year, that opens up the middle of the field, it's running the rock and making them come up to the line of scrimmage. And then it's going to be on Lamar to make those passes. And it just like it was yesterday, if you go back and watch the first couple of drives, the Steelers were doing the mesh charge where they brought an edge player straight at Lamar Jackson so that he had to hand the ball off. So they were taking it out of Lamar's hands, and then they had to adjust because we started to run the ball well, and you can't just take a defensive end player out of the play like that by having them charge Lamar the whole game. So I think that's a good example of how the running scheme kind of helped Lamar out, but then Lamar just didn't execute. And so I think that's the key. I think they need to keep pounding the rock. I think they need to kind of be able to establish that run early, and then it lets the Ravens play their game. And that's what worked in 2019. And I know there's all this talk about the blueprint to beat the Ravens, you know, hem the middle of the field, and it's easier said than done. And I think if Lamar just even plays remotely as well as he could, we win that game on Sunday. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, there are a bunch of little things that go into it, you know, when it comes to what actually gets this offense rolling. But, you know, it's the run game for me, number one. Number one for me is making sure you're running the football effectively and then throwing the football to make the run game work. It's something I've been trying to say for a lot of the last 2 weeks. But our last question here, Cole, it comes from Eric Clark, and he has a ton of questions. I don't think we're going to be able to get to them all today, or else we'll be going for an hour and a half here. And I'll answer the rest of the questions we didn't get to, of course, on Thursday and Friday. But Eric asks, do you believe we need more traditional play action? The RPO is great as our staple, but as we have seen, when disciplined linebackers take Lamar at the mesh point, it can be risky and low reward. I believe traditional play action will help our passing from 11 personnel. What are your thoughts?
So it's a good question, and I think I got into this a little bit after the Eagles game, where the play action they were using was more play action rollouts, and it was leading to a lot of contested throws, and that mesh charge that I'm talking about. Now, what the Eagles were doing wasn't quite mesh charge, but they weren't being fooled by the run. So those defensive ends weren't kind of going down the line at the running back handoff point. They were just kind of cheating on Lamar. And so that is a good point. I think that's what you're referring to, because when you get Lamar rolling, obviously he's going right at these defensive ends. And when they're cheating, it's leading to Lamar having to beat them on the run, which means he's throwing on the run. Or, you know, he's got a guy coming straight at him and he's got to throw a contested ball up. So I think it's a good point. I would like to see them do it. And it is something that they did a ton of last year, especially at a pistol. They would just do a normal play action, you know, drop back. And we did see it a few times on Sunday. I think if they're able to run the ball like they did against the Steelers, you know, I'm okay with, you know, some of those rollouts, but I do like the more traditional play action because it helps Lamar stay in the pocket. It means that he's setting his feet, he's moving in the pocket with his strides rather than kind of running, reestablishing feet, and then driving the ball through his lower body. So I would definitely like to see that. I think it helps him out with maintaining his technique throwing the ball that he's really worked on throughout his years. So it's a good point.
Over the last few years, you're just watching his progression from his rookie season, MVP season, even this year. The progression is clearly there, and that includes with his play-action looks. But still, this Ravens team is kind of a closing point for me. It's going to be okay. It's been a rough few days here, but the Ravens are going to be just fine. But Cole, that's all I have for you today. Thank you for staying on and answering a ton of questions here. And again, if we did not get to your questions here today, we will be answering them tomorrow and on Friday. Cole, this was a blast. Let's do it again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on again. And everybody, thank you for the questions again. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you, Cole. And thank you, everyone, for the questions. That's all that we have for you here today. We'll be answering more of your questions tomorrow, as well as getting into Crossover Thursday with Locked On Colts. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.